pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you so much for listening on this Friday. It's finally Friday morning. Ascension Technologies text line 251-343-0106. You need to get in touch with the program, utilize the text line, and we will try or do our best to respond accordingly. Coming up on the program today, Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News in about a half hour. Miracles never cease to amaze. Governor Ivey has shown up. She's done. She is either in the. Well, I guess they pre-taped it, but Governor Ivey is going to participate in an interview that's going to air tonight on Capital Journal, which is hosted by Todd Stacey, by the way. So that's coming up. We'll talk a little bit about that, I'm sure. Suddenly, school choice is important to the governor. So, hey, it doesn't matter how we get there, just as long as she's out there doing something, that is an achievement. And you won't hear any complaints from me about that. Also on the program, U.S. Attorney Jay Towns. So there's a few things going on in the federal courts. Obviously, the Donald Trump saga just continues and continues and continues. But the redistricting discussion, and I try to get some clarity on this as best as I can, and maybe we can walk through this a little bit. But essentially, there's two schools of thought here, and I don't know what's going to prevail at the end of the day. But what they're doing, you got two competing viewpoints, one in the Senate, one in the House, and you have two maps. And one map is creates one minority-majority district and an opportunity, what they're calling an opportunity district, but puts the African-American population in that quote-unquote opportunity district at about 38, 39%. Downstairs in the House, they have a map, and it's a little rosier for Democrats, and it creates the minority majority district and a opportunity district at about 42%. The House map is what conventional wisdom suggests is what the courts want. What the Supreme Court or what the 11th Circuit decided that it wanted. But what the Senate's doing, it seems like they're playing chicken with the with the 11th Circuit. With the hope of going on to the Supreme Court and getting Kavanaugh to flip. That's the strategy. Don't tell us how to draw our maps, federal court. This is what the Constitution says. So they're operating on this premise the Supreme Court's going to take up this case and they're going to thumb their nose at the 11th Circuit, which I think is a little risky, but watch what we're having Jay Town on, and we're going to talk about that. We'll also talk about, obviously, what it concerns everybody and sort of this Hunter Biden saga. I know we haven't gotten a lot of coverage of that on our mainstream media. It's just... But we're all over Donald Trump, right? Donald Trump has a trial date for May 20th, 2024. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that just announced now on his classified documents. They're the misdemeanor. The trial date's for May 20th, 2024. A great time of year in a presidential cycle, by the way. So we head into the summer and we get ready for this slugfest between what will probably be Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Just in time, ladies and gentlemen. And finally, in the 11 o'clock hour, we got State Senator Chris Elliott. I'm sure he'll also have some things to say about what they're doing. The last day of special session in Montgomery, apparently I picked a bad day to go up there. Wasn't a whole lot going on, but But this is what I gather. There's like competing tracks, a map controversy. So we'll stand by and see which way, which direction that goes. We'll find out probably by midnight tonight. But they're at an impasse. Well, I don't know if they're at an impasse, but that's the way it looks on paper. They're in an impasse in the State House in Montgomery. So this is the place. We'll try to get some clarity on that. And like I said, there's just it's funny because no one would have seen this coming. This is something we'll probably talk to Todd Stacey about later on in the program. Alabama put to death a man last night. First time in a long time. We finally got our act together. But James Edward Barber killed a woman with a claw hammer in 2001. Had to fulfill his death sentence last night or early this morning. And they changed the rules. The death warrant doesn't expire at midnight anymore. It goes till till 6 a.m. And they needed the time because they didn't get the injection done until, I guess, about 2 a.m. I was kind of watching it. We were waiting for it at 1819 News. We were working on a story for it. But they took their time and they got what they needed to do done. And it sounds like that's pretty much it, though, right? I mean, we moved along. And now we have the first execution in quite some time. Jason Aldean controversy, still watching that. Our buddy Mayor Kennan down in Orange Beach speaking out for Jason Aldean. Is Orange Beach going to be like the last sanctuary where right-wingers go? It's the way it's looking right now. As everything goes woke, the places, you don't see many, maybe you do, but just not in Alabama. But where are the most conservative municipal governments that push back against the woke agenda as stridently as Tony Kennan has? Now, you could say whatever his motivations are, that's one thing. He's politically motivated. Whatever you want to say about that. It's fine, but who else is doing it is my question. Why he's doing it is not as important as who else is doing it. I don't know who else is like wading into these weighty culture war issues at that level of government. Not that that's the place for it, but I mean, you look around everywhere else. You look at these libraries around, in these municipal libraries around the state, and they have the weird like children's sexuality books. They have all the, you know, that they celebrate Pride Month or they do something, the Black Lives Matter celebrate, whatever left-wing, new left-wing 2023 cause, and who's pushing back against it, or are people just embracing it? And even here in Alabama, they're embracing it. And the thing is about that, like I said, if the people there want to do that, fine. That's what the city does. It's a reflection of the people that live there, the constituents. It's the consent of the governed there. If they want to have a drag show in the middle of their town square, then so be it. But if they're doing it against the wishes of the people that live there, that's another thing. And then, like, when it happens, not really saying much, hopefully it goes away, there's not too much controversy. Okay. But down at the coast, you have a mayor who's swinging away at all of this and is not a fan of it at all. But who else is out there doing this? I mean, I'm very interested in possibly investigating because you don't, like I said, you don't have anybody who really at this level of government that is saying these things. And like I said, you could say, well, he's doing it for the wrong reasons or whatever, but I you know, who's doing it for whatever reason, it doesn't matter. Carly Russell, you know, this lady who was decided to go disappear for 48 hours and like tell people she saw a toddler on the side of the road. It's just funny how all these things happen in Alabama. This is what was her favorite movie, Taken? What ought to happen to her if she faked a kidnapping? What ought to happen to her? What ought the punishment be for this to get everyone all stirred up? The search history was a little crazy, but my colleague Trip Baker at 1819 News went into her social media. And maybe we should have seen this coming. But there was a bunch of tweets from her indicating there's something not quite right there. But that being said, how much should the punishment be for when Carly Russell of Hoover, for setting this off, setting off this, I don't know, like it wasn't a Amber Alert, but it was an APB. We thought there was a kidnapping on the side of I-459 in Birmingham, and everybody was praying and they were taking up money, and it was like the biggest calls of our day. And it, as it turned out, like things started looking a little weird, and things didn't add up. And then, lo and behold, this lady just shows up back at her house. That is absolutely fascinating. Not so much the event itself, but the way people went nuts about it. Some other things. Yesterday, about the time of this show, RFK Jr. Testified before the House Judiciary Committee. And my takeaway on that is the media coverage of it, not about the substance at all of online censorship from or pressure to censor from government. If that's the same thing as government censorship, that's up to the eye of the beholder. But did the way they're talking, it's more they've decided now somehow or another that Robert Kennedy Jr. is a anti-Semite. The royalty of the Democrat Party for decades and decades and decades, and now I guess because he has a message, they throw out these the pejoratives, and they just go after these people ad hominem attacks. And that's what I was like watching all three channels last night, and it was like House Republicans bring out anti-Semite Robert Kennedy Jr. And that seems a little, even if he did say what he said about the biological engineering or whatever, a little confusing, but what he said about it, aren't we a little jumping the gun there to throw that out? Or hey, oh, I know what's going on. They just wanted to marginalize him as a figure because he criticizes the Biden administration. How about that? 251-343-0106. Let's know what's on your mind. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendant. Oh, mama, can this really be the end? To be stuck inside of Mobile with the Memphis Blues again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Friday. It's finally Friday morning. 251-343-0106. Get in touch with the program. Utilize the text line. Coming up in the next segment, we'll talk to Todd Stacey, who's got an interview with Governor Ivey set to air tonight on Capital Journal. We'll talk to him about that, so please stay tuned. Let's go to the text line. Sean, I think that's where we're going to start. Let's start with Sean. Randy, when's the trial date for Joe Biden's classified document case? Well, I think they are going to go after Trump for not fully cooperating with these guys. That's what it looks like to me. Now, the lawyer for President Trump tried to settle, if you recall. He tried to settle that case. What was his name? Chris Keyes. And then Trump said no, he wanted to fight it. And now it's almost as if the courts have decided, hey, we're going to make an example out of Donald Trump. That's my take on it, why they're pursuing this so aggressively. Buddy writes, Carly is the new Jesse Smollett. Tim, Jeff, they spent hundreds of man hours with the cost of the city of Hoover. She needs to pay all that money back. You're probably right. What if there is a mental illness there? There's something clearly wrong there. You don't just do this. You know what? Does like social media drive this? Does it feed this narcissism? And I mean, I hate to say this, and this is just me speculating, but stick with me here. You get all this attention on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and TikTok, and then you need to feed that beast. So is it entirely possible that there's something else going on here? What do I mean? Like, this was going to get her big followers on Instagram or something. I mean, people crave the attention. So I don't know. That is one possibility there, Jim. But it also could be that she's just crazy. I don't know. The thing is, we were looking into the story initially. There were some, well-placed sources within Hoover City government that said this individual had there were some red flags here with her initially. John writes, what about the many beach towns in Florida with the governor that they have surely at least one or several fighting are woke? You might find something on Microsoft Bing. Well, maybe in Florida. I'm gonna stick to Alabama here. How about that, John? So my question was this: is there anybody at a municipal level that's really pushing back against this cultural revolution we didn't ask for with the wokesters? Has anybody, on the level that Tony Kinnon has? Because what I find with city government, a lot of these city governments embrace this stuff. They welcome this stuff. They're very excited about these celebrations. So, and like I said, there's nothing wrong with it. As long as that's what the people want in that city, then the people shall get it, right? If they want to have a Pride Month celebration or whatever it may be, then so be it. A lot of places, I think I speak, I'm not speaking out of term here, but a lot of people in Alabama don't want any of it. And not many of our elected officials at that level are pushing back against it, at least publicly. Maybe I don't see it. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
It's where I drank my first beer. It's where
the Jeff Force Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday. It's finally Friday morning. 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the program. Hit us up on that text line, and I will do my best to respond. Still to come, Jay Town, former U.S. attorney. We'll talk to him. I'm really curious about what he thinks of the some of the purchase. Well, obviously, we're going to talk Donald Trump and Joe Biden, but I'm eager to hear from him about what he thinks the legislature's up to. I guess it looks like they're going to play chicken with the 11th Circuit, at least the Senate, maybe. But we'll get into that later on in the show. And then finally, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott, who will also shed some light on that. But now we're being joined by the man of the moment who's got kind of the center of it all. Not only does he have Alabama Daily News, but he's also the host of Capital Journal. But Todd Stacey with us. Todd, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for making time for us. I really do appreciate it. Let's kick it off here. What do you have any clue as to what we're going to see by the end of the day today?
Well, they're obviously, you know, the House has one plan, basically, like, you know, the Pringle plan. The Senate has a different plan, the Livingston plan. They're going to conference committee. From talking with several, you know, lawmakers and other folks involved in the process, it sounds like the Senate plan is, the Livingston plan is going to prevail. We'll see that, that may not be right, but from everything I'm hearing, that's the way it's going to happen. And the reason why that matters is this, that, you keep hearing about black voting age population, right? That's why we're here. All right. The Supreme Court was not satisfied with only one district in Alabama, having a high percentage of black voting age population. Well, the House map, the House plan puts the second district at 42, almost 43% black voting age population. The Senate plan puts that population at about 38%. So that's 4% less. Now look, who knows what the federal court will accept, meaning that three-judge panel or ultimately the Supreme Court. Who knows what that magic number is? They were not specific in identifying that. But by any just logical terms, you know, 42 is better than 38, right? If you're going to court, a higher percentage is better than a lower percentage. And so there's a lot of folks scratching their heads, wondering why the legislature would want to go with a lower percentage, that 38 rather than 42, seems like a risky bet at the court.
That's my kind of take on it. Like, clearly the 11th Circuit has an idea where this ought to be. And while the Supreme Court was very vague in its ruling, we do have an idea of what the 11th Circuit wants. And if the legislature goes into this and just kind of thumbs its nose at the 11th Circuit, there's no guarantee that SCOTUS will take this up. Doesn't that seem very, very risky on the behalf of the Alabama legislature?
It does. And look, 42 might be a risk, right? That 42% is almost 43. That might even be a risk, but seems like a better risk, a better bet than 38. Wouldn't you want to go to the court with a higher percentage? Either way, I mean, we just don't know. A lot of this, and you probably read what I wrote in Inside Alabama Politics last week about it. This is all a bet. It's all a risk with the understanding that We're likely to have a special master anyway, so why not just try, right? They're not going to draw a map that Republicans are not going to draw a map that guarantees Democrats a pickup, right? A pickup seat. That might happen anyway, right? If a special master draws these maps, that might happen anyway, but at least they're going to take a shot at it. But there's some, you know, you'll enjoy my conversation with Steve Marshall, the Attorney General, tonight on Capitol Journal, because we walk through some of the legal, reasonings. You know, he wrote this letter to the reapportionment committee, kind of dispelling some of what the plaintiffs had sought and some of their arguments, and sort of foretelling maybe what may be his legal arguments at the Supreme Court or at the district court when these maps get presented. So, it's all a big gamble.
Seems like a tremendous gamble. Now, the other question I have was, like, we kept hearing that Senator Roberts had a plan he was going to file in the special session, and I guess that's why it ended up being the Livingston plan, because no one saw this coming. No one saw the split of the House and the Senate, right? And just all of a sudden they have two maps, and you know, all this is, I guess, have been playing up to this moment, and then everybody sort of acted surprised when the there were two maps and they were sort of at an impasse.
I was surprised. I really was. I mean, look, anybody that's spent any time in Montgomery knows, or Washington for that matter, knows that there's always differences between the House and the Senate. That there's just a different mindset. It happens. But yeah, I was surprised, because I thought, you know, when the Pringle plan came out, the opportunity, you know, district, or I'm sorry, community of interest plan came out, I thought Republicans were settled. But you're right. Senator Roberts from Mountain Brook came with this other plan that was written by Chris Brown, who's a political consultant. And that really threw a wrench into things. It mainly because this wasn't written by the reapportionment committee and its staff, right? And on the reapportionment computers. It had to be sort of retrofitted into that process. Well, that's complicated. You're sort of, square peg, round hole kind of thing. And that has caused some consternation between the House and the Senate. Like I said, from what I'm hearing, the Senate will prevail. Maybe just because, look, you know, I think plenty of House members are just like, well, we're going to court anyway. You know, who cares?
Yeah.
But it is, it seems less than a great process to do it that way.
Well, it's just, I kept hearing Senator Livingston was just frustrated with it all. And it sounded like just because he'd been doing this a lot longer, Representative Pringle kind of took the lead here. And he kept hearing frustrated from Livingston and just shake, and I guess all along he was going to go off, or he had a plan to kind of go off and do his own thing. The Senate doesn't have to take the direction from the House chairman or whatever. And that's what surprised everybody.
Sounds like it. Yeah. So we'll see today. They're going to go to conference committee, here later this morning, and we'll see what emerges. From everything I'm told, the Livingston Senate plan will emerge. And again, I have very little confidence that this map, this congressional redistricting map, will pass muster with the court. So I think we're just waiting on August 14th for a special master to be appointed.
Well, they already got the special master, right?
Oh, no, that'll all happen on the 14th. So the 14th of August, that's when there's a hearing of that three-judge panel in Birmingham at the federal courthouse there. That's when they'll make a decision. And, you know, they'll obviously have the map before then. And so at that point, they'll make a decision. Do these maps, or does this congressional map pass muster? Is it what they wanted? Does it not? And if it's not, that's at the point when they would appoint a special master to draw the map themselves.
Well, I think they have already got the special master. They just don't, they haven't decided if they're going to use it or not. And that was like was talking to somebody, one of the lawmakers the other day about this. Why would the court go ahead and do this and move on this if they weren't already setting this up? And there's a lot of signs here, Todd. It's fascinating. You're starting to see a little bit of a movement, like the Jerry Carl and Barry Moore guys look like they're getting ready for a big campaign cycle. And, you know, you can't help but wonder, they get ready for a head-to-head matchup. Like, all of this is sort of, yeah, this is the way this is probably going to go.
Yeah, I mean, I did not know that. I mean, I had certainly not heard that they had already appointed one or already selected one, a special master. But I have seen some just sort of mock-up maps of, you know, what it could be. And it looks a lot like what the plaintiffs proposed, meaning, yeah, the first and second district get very interwoven there. Basically, the first district goes all the way over to Houston County. The second district comes all the way down into Mobile. And yes, Jerry Carl and Barry Moore would probably be in the same district. Yeah, politically, what does that look like? I don't know. I mean, to me, that Jerry Carl has an advantage there, because I think you get a lot more votes in Mobile and Baldwin than you do over there in the Wiregrass. But, you know, who knows? And would they even, would Barry Moore even run? You know, if you're looking at a disadvantage like that, do you even run? Do you call it a day? We just don't know. We won't know for another month.
And then you get this ugly situation. I mean, everybody's favorite boogeyman, Club for Growth, was really big for Barry Moore, remember, in 2020, and they were very vehemently anti Jerry Carl. They cozied up to Bill Hightower and took the L there. But you can't. I can't help but wonder what this is going to open up. You know, these political consultants are probably drooling right now. If you have two swing districts and then a head-to-head incumbent matchup in a red district. And, I mean, you're changing the political landscape in a bunch of different ways for decades. If this map, I don't know that it sticks. Who knows? There's no guarantee the Supreme Court's going to take this up, right?
This is all going to the Supreme Court one way or the other, meaning let's just say that the three-judge panel appoints a special master, draws its map. Well, I'm just assuming that Steve Marshall is going to, you know,
right.
But challenge that. He's going to challenge that in court.
I guess my question would be this, that the Supreme Court could just take a pass, right, if they wanted to.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They
could always just say,
right,
it's correct. But look, they've got to one way or the other. And maybe it'll happen at the district, you know, court level, the circuit level, or, you know, at the Supreme Court. So they've got to say at some point, or agree with the panel at some point, of what constitutes, what states are supposed to do. Because that's what came, that was actually sort of the big news yesterday, was Austin Lathrum, head of legislative services, said, we have no direction. And we don't, there's the reason why the lawmakers are so divided on these maps is that the courts have not said, hey, draw it at 50%, draw it at 50% black, or draw it at more than 40%, or something. There's just zero direction. It's so vague. So I think whatever happens, the courts do need to be more clear about this, because there's just a big gap between what the Voting Rights Act says and most folks' interpretation of the 14th Amendment and equal protection. So that's exactly when the courts need to step in and say, here's what the law is and here's what it's not. And so I understand Steve Marshall's frustration, because I think the court's been anything but clear on that.
Just a few minutes left here, Todd, but real quick, you got two big guests tonight on Capital Journal, and this is kind of one of these must watch shows in the grand realm of things. But give us a preview of what we're going to see tonight.
Yeah, Governor Kay Ivey is going to be on the show. We're talking about a range of issues, education. She's actually got some big news on education. She's going to be making a big school choice push next year. Also talking about prisons and things like that. Also talking with Attorney General Steve Marshall. plenty of issues there, from redistricting to prisons, all the litigation, the transgender issue that he's dealing with at the federal courts. So, yeah, two great conversations, plus just we're going to go from soup to nuts on redistricting, all that happened this week. So that's Capital Journal tonight at 7:30 on Alabama Public Television.
And real quick, well, walk us through that. The Department of Corrections, the issue there with the Attorney General's office.
It's really interesting. About 2 weeks ago at the Contract Review Committee meeting, this is lawmakers reviewing contracts. The Department of Corrections has you know, just these millions of dollars of contracts in, you know, for lawyers, or in this case, one lawyer representing them on all these federal lawsuits. And of course, this is the one chosen by the Attorney General. And, you know, you're getting up to like $22 million that's being spent on legal fees. So my question to Marshall was, we're spending all these millions of dollars on legal fees. Is there any end in sight? Right? Years long. We're what? 4 years into one and 7 years into the other. Is there any end in sight? And so he did offer some insight into sort of his end game, but also disputing what the Department of Corrections had said about his unwillingness to negotiate settlements in this case. So a very enlightening interview. I encourage folks to watch it.
And one more thing, folks want to sign up for your newsletter, check out Alabama Daily News. How can they do so?
It's really easy. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. You can sign up right there on the homepage. Just enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list to get that daily news email right in your inbox about 8:30 every morning.
Todd, always, we appreciate it. Let's talk again soon.
All right, Jeff. Be good.
All right. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Force Show on FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Force Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. Text line to say get in touch with the program. Coming up into next hour, Jay Town, U.S. Attorney. We'll talk to him. Get his thoughts on a bunch of different things going on and on the federal courts. And something that's uniquely interesting, especially to Alabama. But that's coming up in about a little more than a half hour, so please stay tuned for that. Also, State Senator Chris Elliott, who's they're underway still for another, let's see, 12, another 13, 14 hours at least, or at most in Montgomery for the special session as they debate new redistricting maps. So what's going on here? Just to kind of recap, in case you haven't been paying attention, just tuning in today, a month ago or so, this U.S. Supreme Court said no to Alabama's maps when they did the reapportionment back in 2021. Remember, every 10 years, the U.S. does a census, and with that census, they determine how many congressional seats each state gets. And those states, of course, they draw maps, and every 10 years they have to do that. For the most part, now there was some fear that Alabama was going to lose a congressional seat, but they kept all seven, and essentially drew the same map as they had drawn in 2010 and in 2000. Well, as per normal, every time they do that, this goes to court. Some left-wing legal nonprofit sues the state of Alabama, claims violations of the Voting Rights Act, and then it gets batted down, or they move the lines slightly or whatever. Well, for the first time, the federal courts decided that the way the state had been interpreting the Voting Rights Act for the last 20 years was improper. But they had to take into account race, and the Supreme Court affirmed that. So that's where we are. We're redoing the maps in Montgomery, at least for the next several hours. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poore Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. Need to be in touch with the program. Utilize your texting device. Former U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Alabama, Jay Towne, will be with us in about 30 minutes. And in about an hour and a half, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. So make sure that you stick around for that. As I said, 251-343-0106. Utilize the text line, and I will try to respond accordingly. I've had a few things going on here. As I mentioned, trying to explain this in the last segment before we went to the break there. Why are we at where we are right now with the Alabama legislature redrawing congressional districts? And it goes back, it goes back to 2020 and the late census data, and then the rush, remember, in 21 to draw new maps. And then immediately these lawsuits were filed, but, in the 11th Circuit, so the 11th Circuit of Court of Appeals intervened, and they were going to force upon Alabama a map that it had drawn. And if y'all recall, people were just apoplectic about it. It was like, how are we gonna get this map done in time? The election's right around the corner. Well, the Supreme Court intervened and said, no, proceed with the lines you've already drawn, and then when we hear the case, then we'll make a ruling accordingly. They ruled that Alabama had to start all over. So here we are. We're in a special session. It started back on Monday. I tell you what's peculiar about this, because the word on the street, and this was something, this time a week ago, Todd Stacey and I had speculated this would be the case, that the special session would just be a formality. They would do what they had to do. They pretty much had an idea of which way the maps were going to be drawn, and everybody was going to be in agreement that you don't bring bills to the floor without knowing if they're going to pass or not pass. Well, they passed. It turns out there was not consensus from the House or the Senate. And it's funny. This ought to be the lesson. I kept hearing from lawmakers, and I kept hearing from some of the lobbyists in Montgomery just how frustrated the new chairman of because what had happened when they Jim McClendon, a good friend of the program, but he retired. He didn't run again in 2022. He had been headed up to Senate reapportionment effort, and our very own Chris Pringle here in Mobile had done the House. Well, when McClendon retired, they appointed Steve Livingston, who's from the opposite corner of the state up in Scottsboro, to head the Senate effort. And we kept hearing that it was just frustration from Livingston, but things were just kind of proceeding as they went along. Well, I guess no one saw this coming, because the senator was really, really keeping his cards close to his vest. But he brought his own map that was different from the map that the House brought, and a lot of people were caught off guard, including yours truly. So here we sit on Friday, July 21st, 2023, and it turned out that this is not just a formality, that you really do have some very big differences of opinion, and this could go to midnight. But as things always go, they tend to resolve these. Another headline you're probably not keeping track of. I'm going to be curious to see what she says tonight on Capital Journal. But Governor Ivey She did see her shadow 7 weeks ago, and now she's up on Todd Stacey's Capital Journal tonight talking about school choice. So she has a school choice plan, and she's getting an early start on it here in 2023. Now, they won't reconvene until 2024. The governor with a school choice push. Now, maybe it's just charter school or something like that. But we kept hearing from the governor early this year, before there was any legislative activity, that this was going to be the year for education. And then there was going to be the end-all, be-all for education. And she was going to shepherd it through. Well, after her state of the state, she kind of just disappeared. And I did, a lot of people were like, well, does Kay Ivey even want to be governor of Alabama? Where is she? Well, she's doing a ribbon cutting. But she's not really giving public remarks. She's not. She didn't have a policy agenda that she was promoting. She didn't have any of that. She lay low, and no one could figure out why. But then here she is with a renewed, school choice push. And I'm very eager to hear what that broadcast is like tonight. Will Alabama, some of these, you know, big ticket items, will she talk about prisons? Will she discuss I-65? Will she talk about, obviously, education? You see how these other governors doing things, especially governors in the states that surround Alabama, and our governor has not done a whole lot in the last 6 months, if you ask me. I mean, not even done a lot. I mean, she's, like I said, she's just showed up at things and given a speech or two. And, you know, governor's supposed to be a full-time job, but either she's really good at working behind the scenes or she's missing. She's not at the switch there. A question I have outstanding, why not it happen to old... What had happened to this woman in Hoover who stirred the pot here? Carly Russell, and you faked her own abduction. And then I just argue this is all fed by this like narcissism generated by online social media. But wanting, you know, I mean, what's going to get you the most follows or most likes? Well, this would be pretty big. What ought to happen to her? Now, look, she hasn't been convicted of anything, but the allegation is that she faked her own abduction, and by doing so, really set off a lot of law enforcement. People panicked. But you also had volunteers going around trying to find her and help with but it turned out just to be a hoax. Or that's the allegation. What ought to happen to her if it was a hoax? What ought the punishment be? Because my understanding is that the Hoover Police Department's really ticked off about this. 251-343-0106. If you have any ideas, let me know. I'm happy to entertain them. Not that it matters a lot, but I would like to hear. Jason Aldean with the controversial song. Try that in a small town. Somehow it's been interpreted by the American left as racist. These guys are grasping. Well, what's going on here? So CMT, on the old country music television, which I did not know. I knew existed, but I thought they just played movies like, you know, you'd flip through and... there would be like George Strait, what was it, a Pure Country or whatever rerunning, or maybe a Smokey and the Bandit with the cuss words cleaned up, or something, some old Burt Reynolds movie from the 70s. Maybe a little Cannonball Run. Y'all remember the Cannonball Run? But you just flip through. Oh, isn't that cute? They're playing that. Now I got to go find wherever that Vanderbilt Ole Miss football game is being aired at on SEC Network 12 or whatever. So you knew it still existed, but I didn't know they still played music videos. Well, apparently they pulled this Jason Aldean song off of CMT. And that's created quite a stir. So now the songs, as these things typically go, they backfire. And people are now really into some Jason Aldean. Now, I don't think it's his best work, but whatever. It's his most political work to this point. Now, wasn't Jason Aldean, doesn't he have the wife who's like making like MAGA purses or something and selling them on Etsy? Well, anyway, our friend Mayor Cannon down in Orange Beach, a big Jason Aldean fan. And said that trying to encourage him to buy a vacation home. But is Orange Beach becoming like the enclave for right wingers? Where you don't have to worry about your schools being taught gender ideology, where you don't have to worry about Common Core math or whatever the conservative boogeyman of the day. You don't have to worry about any of that stuff. Because where else are you going to get that? Where else are you seeing that? Now, somebody said some of the towns on the Florida Panhandle, but we're in Alabama. Ruby Red, Alabama. Where are some of the conservative enclaves where you're never going to have to worry about pride flags flying from your light poles or whatever it may be? They still put a cross on the courthouse lawn, and they tell the Freedom From Religion Foundation to go pound sand or whatever. Would you like to see more of that? The counterculture, as I like to say. 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Hit us up there. Let us know what you're thinking. If you want to respond to anything I am saying. Let's see here. Buck has a lot to say. When you're elected an 80-year-old as governor, it's not like he's going to be vibrant, have the energy to run the state. That's quite obvious. She's a damn Democrat with an R in front of her name. Kayabi should have never been reelected. She's a Democrat. Alabama voters need to start paying attention to who they are electing. Well, given the choices, though, Buck, I mean, let's look back. In 2018 was your first go-around. You had a guy named Scott Dawson. You had Senator Hightower. And you had Tommy Battle. Not a terrible slate of candidates, to be honest. But Governor Ivey inherited the office by virtue of being lieutenant governor when Bentley had to make his exit. And she had the benefit of incumbency. She never had to really run a true gubernatorial campaign and talk about her ideas. She because, guys, when she had run for governor in the past, she never really got traction. Remember, she was a candidate in that 2014 cycle. No, that's not right. It was 2010. She was a candidate in 2010. She wasn't polling well. And at some point announced she was going to run for lieutenant governor. Remember that? But she has tried to run for governor and in the past, and this was like when she was much younger, just never called on. But winning a lieutenant governor's race was a lot easier. She won that, and then next thing you know, she's governor. Well, a 2018 campaign, there really wasn't much of a campaign there. They were worried more about 2018 in the general election because, if you recall, a year earlier, 2017, Doug Jones beat Roy Moore, and people started speculating, could this happen again? And you saw her put a real big emphasis on the general, but she trounced Walt Maddox, the mayor of Tuscaloosa, that general election. We gotta get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean. Jack Daniels whiskey at 1.5 is how the folks around here have been living their lives, waking and baking every morning at 8.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. We'll appreciate it. 251-343-0106. Jay Taff from U.S. Attorney. Coming up in the next segment, so please stay tuned. In the meantime, let us know what you're thinking out there. 251-343-0106. Text line. We got a few of those to get to here. Kay Ivey, though, back to her being a Democrat. I mean, like I said, she never really caught on. And then she inherits the governor's chair. And look, I mean, looking back, 2018, and then again in 2022 with, I don't got a star-studded field, but Tim James, a little name ID, and then Lindy Blanchard just pillowcases full of money to spend on campaigns. And still prevail without a runoff. I told y'all this in 2022. About this time a year ago, here's what I said. I said, look, she wins, if KIV wins by a big margin, the only possible interpretation we could have, and she won by, but she won by big margins in her primary and in the general. The only possible interpretation, the only possible takeaway is, hey, this is a mandate. People want more of what they had in my first 6 years as governor. So at the time, to me, it was like, well, they want more vaccine mandates and mask ordinances, and they want more gas tax. This is what they want. And you're kind of like, holy cow, this is what people voted for. No pushback for the, not even in our area, guys. In Mobile, Baldwin County, thought, well, the way that bridge was handled, maybe that will eat her numbers. Nope, not even close. This is what you get. I mean, we just low turnout. I'm not voting in the primary. My vote doesn't count anyway. There's a conspiracy to take my vote away. I mean, I don't know how many people think that, but that's what happens. Unnamed texter didn't realize. Wait, yeah. Didn't realize I missed Debbie Wasserman Schultz until she spoke in the hearing yesterday. How can you miss her? You mean former Democratic National Committee Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who paved the way for Hillary Clinton to be the nominee in 2016 to lose to Donald Trump in that 2016. That Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I didn't know she was still a thing. Apparently she is. What does this pertain to? Now, she did kind of make a scene yesterday with Kennedy testifying before the House Judiciary Committee, but it didn't go anywhere. So that Debbie Wasserman Schultz. But she's still a thing. She's still in Congress. She still represents that congressional district. So make of that what she will. I guess we're gonna find out. I don't know what's gonna ever come of the allegations that are coming to surface about Hunter Biden. And we're finding out just how much Joe Biden was involved. This ought to be impeachable. Well, here's the question. We all know what the allegations are, and there seems to be definitive proof that what has been alleged actually happened. So what's the next step? Are we going to wait for the media to care? Because that day's never going to come. You're never going to see this on NBC, ABC, or CBS evening newscast. Are we waiting for CNN? Are we waiting for Jake Tapper to say, well, this is just too much here. This is never going to happen. So what has to happen? And what I'd like to see is impeachment. The House initiates impeachment. Well, then you can't ignore it anymore. And then you have to debate the merits of these allegations. And it's not even about winning in a court of public opinion. It's just drawing attention to it. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
There ain't nobody looking back again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Force Show on FM Talk 106.5. Ascension Technologies text line 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. So look, I'm on the program. About an hour from now, State Senator Chris Elliott, the show's returning champion, calling in from Montgomery as they are underway, well, at least for the next 13, 14 hours, special session before the clock runs out. Well, you don't know what's going to happen there, but maybe we'll get some clarity on that coming up in about an hour. But joining us now, from time to time, we like to talk to this gentleman. Always a very kind to come on this show. He's the former U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Alabama, Jay Town, with us. Jay, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Close of a long week. Glad to join you.
Hey, I appreciate you making time for us. This is what I wanted to get you on and talk about. And here's my rough interpretation of kind of what's going on is there's two competing maps in the legislature. And we just had Todd Stacey on, and he thinks the legislature is going to gamble here. And they're going to just put out a map. It doesn't really create two minority-majority districts. It creates one. Are really close to one, and then another what they're called an opportunity district. But most Democrats, and then I think like me as well, not quite sure it meets. It's going to pass muster with the federal courts, at least the 11th Circuit. And the idea here that the legislature ought to know that it's not, but they're kind of resigned to the idea that a special master is going to be put forward anyway. Here's my question. Knowing what we know and knowing what we think, and I know we're basing on a lot of assumptions here because these court decisions are very vague, but by just kind of nonchalantly thumbing your nose at the 11th Circuit and working off of this assumption that you get another shot at the Supreme Court seems like a very, very risky proposition to me.
It does. And, you know, anytime you take fate out of your own hands, it, you know, things become perilous quickly. And let me say this before I answer sort of the broader question here. If this doesn't convince Republican leadership and Republicans across the state, from the local dog catcher all the way up to the governor's office, that we now, more than ever, have an opportunity and, in fact, a duty to start folding into the Republican Party, the Republican tent, minorities, then it's never going to happen. The Democrats have failed minorities in Alabama for decades, and that failure continues. They can't even get through a summer meeting without total chaos. This is a great opportunity for Republicans, when 2030 census rolls around, to be able to have the ability to say that voters in largely minority populated districts actually vote Republican. Or if they have an opportunity district, or even a district that is the majority is African American. Well, guess what? Let's get those people voting Republican. What's the problem? But to your broader legal question, I'll say this. The Milligan case offered literally no clarity at all to the litigation. Didn't offer any percentages that would meet legislative muster under the Voting Rights Act. No suggestions, no alternative maps, not even a favored map. And one thing that you hear a lot in the media, but is not true, Alabama is not required to form a second majority-minority district at all. In fact, this would violate the 10th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, the 15th Amendment. It would violate separation of powers. In fact, it would violate Gingell, which is the premier Voting Rights Act that really controls this case under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. So we're not obligated. And no state is obligated to form X amount of majority-minority districts. None. And I'll give you a great example. Look at New York, state of New York. It has 26 districts. 16 of those districts are majority white districts. 3 are Hispanic and 7 have no majority. There is not one district in the state of New York, very liberal state, very blue state, that is a majority minority African American district. Not one. And yet there's no challenge to that gerrymandering as being racially or facially racist or racially not neutral. And so, you know, there's a lot of issues here. There's just part of the problem in Alabama is that the Black Belt, as it's referred to anyway, is very compact with that 26-27% of the Black population in the state of Alabama. It's 11 of the 67 counties, which, by the way, is about 1/7 of the state. And that is also, you know, 1 out of 7 congressional seats. So, you know, the math, you can continue to do the permutations and still end up with 1 out of 7. And so I do think that if they were to boost, I believe the Pringle map, which came out of the House, it creates an opportunity district of around 42% of African-American voters. I don't know that the state is going to do a lot better than that. I certainly don't think the Republican legislature is going to do any better than that. They're not going to create a second majority-minority district. They're just not going to do it. They're going to force a court to make them do it if for any other reason then politics just demands it. That big bad court made us do it. We didn't do it as legislators, so they can go back to their districts and say it's not their fault. Now, look, this is incredibly complicated litigation. The law around the Voting Rights Act is very complicated. It's a 5-hour show, Jeff. But I can tell you it doesn't surprise me and I hope that the legislature is using data to drive this. I hope that they're not just, you know, cutting across, you know, city and county lines to draw a convenient map. They have to be using data because that is what drives the 11th Circuit and indeed the district court panel's decision here.
So I don't know the temperament of the courts here, but if it looks like that the legislature is just openly defying, and look, the 11th Circuit's already let it be known what it thinks about the way Alabama handled reapportionment in 2021 and the Voting Rights Act. But if the legislature just looks like they're just complete defiance of that, I mean, does that stand to hurt the state's, you know, standing in court? It's not something you typically want to do is get on the bad side of a court, right?
Right. You don't want to tick off the judges in any kind of, it's a traffic ticket, right? This is, you know, high level legislation involving a seat in the House of Representatives. And so I don't know if the court's going to take it that way. They've done something. And I think the district court panel is going to assume that whatever they do is going to be appealed. Even if they appoint a special master, the basis of that order will be appealed to the 11th Circuit and maybe onward to the Supreme Court. The recent Harvard, North Carolina decision is interesting precedent. It's new precedent that was not argued or even available to argue in this Milligan case. And if you read the, as you made me do last night, you read the Milligan opinion. It's only a couple hundred pages, Jeff. You know, I had time at 10 o'clock when you asked me to come on the show today. But what it, Kavanaugh's concurring opinion, and he was the fifth and deciding vote, it does sort of allude to him sort of being able to be swayed towards Thomas's dissent, which would be the fifth vote the other way, which is that, you know, discrimination is discrimination. And if you are carving out any race to draw a congressional district, then that is not going to, in a Clarence Thomas world, in perhaps a Justice Kavanaugh world, that's not going to pass constitutional muster. And so, you know, Thomas is long, doesn't think the Voting Rights Act is lawful at all. And the Shelby case, I think, points that out very clearly. This last prong, this Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act is sort of the last bastion of hope. But it's so driven by facts and data, and there's just some sort of reality sometimes that, you know, you do have these compacted areas that are full of minorities that make up a large percent of the population. And it's hard to not crack those districts so that you put those in two different districts to provide two opportunity districts. It's easier to put them all in one, so the majority minority is guaranteed a seat that votes the way that they would like to vote. And I think that Republicans need to be able to say in 2030, when this is litigated again, that, hey, African Americans are voting Republican more than ever. And we're basing this on the Republican map, not on a racial map. It just so happens that 93% of the time, African American voters in the state of Alabama vote for Democrats. So it's nearly all of them. So when you carve out Democrats, you're carving out African Americans. And so it's a real hard factual reality for the state of Alabama to get around.
Joined by former U.S. Attorney Jay Towne here on the program. Well, tell me this, though. Now, the Milligan decision, and I've been operating on this assumption, but just to clarify it, they were arguing in this decision that the state of Alabama was not operating either in the spirit of the law or to find the law with the Voting Rights Act, not the merits of the Voting Rights Act itself. So later on down the line, could Alabama or any other state challenge the constitutionality here in 2023 or beyond of the Voting Rights Act and how it really, ties into what the states are told to do by the Constitution? Could it be found ultimately to be not constitutional?
It could, and that was not argued in the Milligan case, as I think you're pointing out. And that would be sort of a 10th Amendment, maybe a 14th and 15th Amendment challenge. And you know, look, Congress has had opportunity since 1982. So there's two tests in the Gingles test. There's the intent, which is, yes, we intended to carve out African Americans and minorities and marginalize their vote. Okay. If we don't all agree that that's racist and unconstitutional, I don't know what to tell you. But the other test, the effects test, the impact test, meaning we let a computer do it, and it was agnostic, and it came up with these seven districts that just had to have one compact minority district, and then the rest were sort of scattered into the other six in the Alabama instance. Well, if it has the impact under Gingles, then that's just as bad as if it was intentional. Well, this is all just a law. This isn't constitutionally based. This is all just part of the Voting Rights Act. So Section 2 could be amended by Congress at any time. And we've had control of the Congress and the White House since 1982, and we haven't done it. And here we are now, and at a time where the House of Representatives is perilously close to being even, or, you know, certainly needing as many red seats as they can get, you know, here we are. And isn't that just, it's almost like it's a tradition to do nothing until we're just in absolute peril in the United States Congress. It becomes maddening at some point, right?
Well, yeah. And Congress is what it is. I mean, it is, they can't even get to pay the light bill in time to keep the lights from going off in Washington, D.C. So you're absolutely right about what Congress could do, but the realistic expectation is you're never going to see any movement on that from the Congress. I mean, everything is so evenly divided and easily demagogued. And then even when you do have the best of scenarios, which, you look at Obama, right, when he took office, he had a filibuster-proof Senate and a majorities in the sure. House. He couldn't get anything done. He still lost his own members. It was just like a last-ditch effort to get Obamacare. So, like, there's no reason to have faith in Congress here, I suppose, but it is going to fall on the courts to decide some of these things.
Well, and it shouldn't, right? I mean, I don't believe that is the role of the courts. And to your point, you know, there's been, after the Dobbs decision, there's been a lot of talk about a federal right to abortion or a complete federal abortion ban. Well, if Congress wanted to do that, one way or the other, Obama and Clinton and even Joe Biden, they all had the opportunity to pass a law that made that a federal right or made that a federal prescription. And they didn't. And Republicans, too. They could have banned abortion during the Trump administration. They didn't. And so, you know, waiting for the courts and blaming lifetime appointed people for what Congress has failed to do, it's almost like it's becoming a national pastime. It's not judges' fault that Congress doesn't require themselves to acknowledge unintended circumstances or consequences. And so that's why they should fix them. But right and wrong and politics, right and left, those are two different things up there. It's a crazy town, Jeff.
I'm well aware of that. Hey, real quick, with the minute or two we have left here, the latest things we found out about the FBI and the IRS and these whistleblowers, if what turns out to be true, I mean, I don't know what the repercussions would be, but it certainly will send shockwaves through the court of public opinion, right?
For sure. I mean, the political shockwaves, I think we're seeing that wave offshore right now. As far as prosecution goes, I mean, if this thing was slow walked, and it sure seems like it has been, then it was beautifully done. It was masterfully done because the statute of limitations on almost all this stuff has passed. And typically that's 5 years. It's really six for tax cases. But a lot of this stuff was back in 15, 16, 17, even 2018. And there's really not a lot at this point that can be done about it. Congress is going to refer charges on Hunter Biden, and the statute of limitations probably has passed on all of those things, unless you can come up with some conspiracy that would toll that statute into the five-year window. That's going to be tough. And you're also referring it to a Biden Justice Department for the next year and a half anyway. So I don't think we're going to see any criminal repercussions. But boy, shedding light on all of this has, I think, been instructive for the core sort of concentration of power that's in Washington, D.C. I'm not for defunding the FBI or anything ridiculous like that. But if you were to start, maybe peeling away some of the headquarters in the Washington, the field office, you know, career employees and putting them out in the field where the real work is done, where the real agents are, that might not be a bad idea, so that there's a different perspective than the Beltway perspective. Because I'm going to suggest, and this is going to be, maybe a little controversial, Jeff, I'm going to suggest that the Beltway perspective is not the American perspective all the time.
You think? No, just being around a lot of civil servant, these bureaucrat types, they really do. There is an awful strain of elitism that I don't know. Not even justified, but that's a discussion for another time. Jay, thanks for making time for us, and thanks for reading that couple hundred page decision for this program last night.
Hey, you got
this. Is like you're back in law school, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was a long time ago. Thanks for the memories.
Jay Tab, ladies and gentlemen, former U.S. attorney. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
On a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound. And no one could change my mind, but Mama tried.
They began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
We looked down a river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton bales and didn't say a thing.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. Alabama legislature right now, at least the state senate, Singleton's up there talking about how that the Republicans in the legislature are trying to take his voice away or something. I just like remind the good man from where was he from, Greensboro, there in Hale County that with the exception of one Roger Smitherman, he talked more than the other 33 state senators in Alabama in 2023, more than all of the rest of them combined. So, you had two state senators that could talk to 78% of the time during the 2023 session, and then everybody else sort of talked. They didn't. I mean, they just cumulatively, not that much. So no one's trying to silence Bobby Singleton's voice. If they could, they ought to cloture the hell out of him. But he's up there talking about the maps and what might emerge from this conference committee. What's going to happen is you're going to have the House and the Senate. They're going to have conferees, and they're going to hammer out a deal, and the Alabama legislature will sidey-die once again. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. Ascension Technologies text line 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Texting me. Text me, and I will try to respond. Still to come, State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion, will be with us. A couple texts to get to here real quick before we get into we proceed with the program. Meanwhile, Kay may have run her course. She did a fair job for a couple of years, but let's move. She can enjoy her retirement, and Alabama can get some fresh blood. I think we need it. But will she go quietly? Well, you know, it's interesting, Damn Yankee, that if Kay Ivey fulfills her entire term, longest consecutive serving governor in the history of the state, I mean, it's not quite as long as like an Alabama versus Tennessee winning streak or something, but that's a pretty damn long time, 10 years, to be governor consecutively. Now, we're a long way before we get there. I mean, she's still got to get to the end of 2024. I mean, 2025. And then on into 2026. But she has the potential here to be that. I mean, George Wallace didn't do this. All of his time as governor was non-consecutive. Or there were some consecutive terms in there. But just what I'm saying to you. I think she goes quietly because you want to know something, Damn Yankee? She's quiet right now for the most part. So she's coming quietly and she's going to go quietly. I don't think you got to worry about that. There won't be any controversy with her. But what's her crowning achievement? If she goes all 10 years, well, here we are sitting here today. We are what? 7 years into an Ivy term, a Ivy gubernatorial run. She passed the gas tax, rebuilt Alabama, and my God, we're still seeing rebuild Alabama signs 4 years, 5 years later. They still haven't fully sold the public on this gas tax. That's why they got to put those signs up. Even Obama's run with the shovel ready stuff didn't last this long. My name texter, hey Jeff, I'm sorry I switched things up here, but I don't want to alarm the public, but I need your help. If you're going to go with the text line, be careful about sending me text if you don't want me reading them over the air there. And then Grant, go quietly in the night, LMAO. I like it when people use LMAO and LOL for a text line chat. But that's from Grant. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program. Here's a thought. The Republicans and Dems might mess up if Robert Kennedy Jr. and Tulsi run together on a third-party independent ticket. That would be more than enough to upset the apple cart on both sides, make it totally unpredictable, in my opinion. I don't know that you'd see that. The thing is, Grant, I mean, third party, you're just a spoiler at that point. Democrats are really, really greedy when it comes to votes, and they're worried about, like, Cornel West might be a Russian plan or some nonsense like that. When you run third party and your party takes votes away from the Democrat, suddenly it's an assault on our democracy. You know, so that old Doug Jones. Still don't know what's happened to Doug Jones. I mean, I knew he was a Democrat. I knew he had these lefty tendencies. But when did he become like this wokester? Maybe he was that all along, and we try to give him the benefit of the doubt. But the stuff he's just a shill or whatever the conventional wisdom of the left is right now. He could never run again in Alabama. I don't think I take that back. The Dale Jackson theory is that he'll run for Terry Sewell's seat. How many guys go from the U.S. Senate to being a backbencher in the House of Representatives? But that is if they redraw the lines, these congressional lines. So we don't know what's going to happen, but where are we going to be, say, a year from now? We're sitting here on July 21st, 2024. We'll know who the Republican nominee and Democrat nominees are for all of these districts. But what will the districts be? So there's a lot of speculation that Mobile, Dolphin Island, the Dothan Congressional District looks like a real possibility. Now, we heard what Todd Stacey mentioned, that Barry Moore might not run, which I would find very, very hard to believe. I think these guys are going to run head-to-head, Jerry Carl and Barry Moore. Neither's really showing their hand. They're kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. But that's going to be just a big, big race. But the other two districts, if a special master draws them, and then I think what a special master will do, I mean, to some professor, to some academic type in New Jersey who they will employ to do this, and they don't, they look at Alabama as a monolith. They're not going to look at Alabama necessarily as a state with different communities of interest. Guys, you don't understand when you take the power out of the hands of a legislative body here at home. But to a guy in like Connecticut, do you think they see any difference between Grand Bay and Geneva County? No. Now they may see difference between the Bronx and Staten Island. But they're not gonna be as discriminating when it comes to what the quote unquote communities of interest. And they're gonna draw these lines, but we're gonna have turmoil in at least one congressional district, it looks like. And if you have two congressional districts that are brand new with new lines and new character, I mean, for the next 10 years at least, you're going to have a situation with just if you have two purple districts, can you imagine the politics every year? Who's going to run against the incumbent this time? And if you have a Democrat wave or you have a Republican wave, you could have a new congressman every other year. Because typically what we do in this state, we like to elect our federal delegation to stay there a long time. Now, we've had a lot of bumpy, it's been a little different in the past. Our Senate seats, since Jeff Sessions left and then Shelby retiring, we've had a lot of turnover there. Well, historically, 10, 20, 30 years is in the norm. You know, somebody goes to the Senate and they stay there. And, of course, they bring home the bacon. But what's this going to look like, especially on a congressional level? You have Robert Aderholt, who's been there since the 1990s, Mike Rogers since the early 2000s. Then you got, let's see, Gary Palmer, who's been there since the mid-2000s, what, 2014s-ish. Del Strong is new. What else? Barry Moore, Jerry Carl, very new. And then Terry Silver came in that 2010 cycle when Arthur Davis thought he would run for governor. And that's the textbook lesson of Arthur Davis, that you don't get on the bad side of Joe Reed. But you got two new districts and potential for Democrat or Republican to win both of them with a special master drawing it. It's going to be like playing a board game. Not necessarily a great thing for politics, but very intriguing for us here at FNFM Talk 106.5 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program, please do so. The other thing, did any of you watch this IRS whistleblower yesterday? I guess it was on during this program. And we learned, or it was the day before, but we learned a little bit about, yeah, they slow walked. As Jay Towns said, they pulled it off. They slow walked this investigation for the statute of limitations to run out. Now, my argument is this. Congress can impeach for whatever reason they want. Maybe you got to impeach just to make it a political issue in a presidential election year. I don't know. But then you got to force like Andrea Mitchell or Anderson Cooper or whoever. David Murr. Defend what the Biden administration, what Joe Biden has done as president. And you're gonna get it out there, and it's going to have a political impact. Isn't that the hope? Isn't that the ambition? And if you can do that, and then maybe you got a better chance at 2024 to win the presidency back. It's having to game plan it this way really makes my hair hurt, but that's where we are. We'll see if that holds. But here's the one thing: Congress now in control of Republicans for like 6 months. Do you feel like you're getting some W's there? Do you feel like we're starting to get some light shed on the FBI and Christopher Wray? Or is it a situation where we're not really hearing anything we didn't already know? Will people finally say, hey, you know, we need to start taking a closer look at the FBI and the Department of Justice, because it's so political? And here's what you're seeing. The response seems to be that, hey, we need to move the FBI and break it up and get it outside of the Beltway where there's not as much politics. I mean, I feel like maybe that would be true if we weren't such a connected politically, well, not just politically connected, but just online and everything where instantaneous communication takes place. Maybe you don't have the same parties you go to or whatever. I don't know. But the bureaucracy, and these are not impressive people in these career bureaucrat spots. But moving, breaking the FBI up, taking it out of D.C. and moving it around the country, does that make good sense from a national security perspective? That'll be the argument against it. But will Congress try to do something along those lines? Or the next president, perhaps? Is that how you break up the deep state? Hit us up on the text line. Grant says, yep. Richard Shelby. Who's excited for the Shelby Institute at the University of Alabama? This sounds like a fun place to take your kids. So, like, this weekend, young Benjamin and I are going out around town. What do you do with it? Mom's in out of town for some work. Me and a two-year-old are exploring. Where do you take a two-year-old? I was thinking the zoo. But that's a discussion for another time. Let's get a break in here. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Always a stage and a beautiful babe to squeeze my life. In my simple way, guess you could say I'm living in the big time.
The poets tell how Bon Jovi fell and left his living cheap hotel.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. Coming up Monday on the program, please tune in. State Representative Jennifer Fiddler making her every other week appearance. And then Del Jackson on WVNN, Yellowhammer News, and the Chief Gator correspondent for everything north of the Tennessee River. If you want alligator news, Del Jackson is your guy. I wonder what he would have thought of that news break there. The two are the aggressive alligator and Daphne. Oh, yeah. I mean, it would have been pitchforks and torches for Dale if he were a resident of the Eastern Shore. See what we got here. Who's excited for the Barbie movie? Not me. And here's the thing, they're going to screw it up. They probably did. The other movie, Oppenheimer, this sounds to me, this has written all over it, like left-wing revisionist history. This is the kind of movie that wins a bunch of Oscars, but no one had ever seen. Also, Lana Del Rey working at a Waffle House up in the Shoals. I guess she was up there recording at one of the studios and for whatever reason decided to take some orders at Waffle House and get her closer to humanity. Probably a lot of you are like, who the hell is Lana Del Rey? But apparently she's very popular among the kids, I am told. No, I know who Lana Del Rey is. That was just me being facetious. But but there's another Alabama tie there. It's like Matthew McConaughey and Lana Del Rey are hanging out in Alabama. And you can't tell if they're trying to be part of a joke or if this is some kind of, hey, I just want to be one with the people. You know, when you're in that rarefied air of Hollywood and you're in these very elite entertainment circles, I guess Alabama seems like a place you need to go to get away from that, you know. Captain John, at least you will have more digital copies of Conversation or Travel Records. And then a picture from Sly, who sends a Donald Trump Jr. Instagram post making a comparison between Try That in a Small Town by Jason Aldean and WAP by Cardi B. This is for your eyes. So you said, Sly, you said something to Sean, but you tell me not to read it on the radio. Wait till Sean's on the air to utilize the text line if you have queries for Sean Sullivan on Midday Mobile. 251-343-0106. I got to be careful about what I read from the text line, but a comparison of Jason Aldean and Cardi B. Look, the world's full of contradictions and double standards. What happened with Jason Aldean is pretty clear. the advertisers at Paramount got a little nervous and they said, hey, you better not play this song. And it got back to Jason Aldean. And now it's really putting the spotlight on these guys. But that's, that's the world we live in. And it's not like I didn't know that CMT was still a thing, playing music videos. I guess they are. I know about the song, and here's the weird thing. The song came out in May, and we're just now getting into the controversy in late July. And what is the controversy here is being anti-crime suddenly racist? If that's what we're being told by the left, they're telling us to be an anti-crime, which is the theme of this song, is being racist. Who's the real racist here? And I think you could make the case that the guys telling us that is are the real racist. Figure it out. It's like a math problem. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Music row ain't only in Tennessee, so won't you bury me in Dixie?